Three, two, one. Happy New Year from our friends over at Manscaped. The ball has officially dropped, but that doesn't mean you have to drop the ball on your balls in 2023. Whether you had a New Year's kiss or not, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming have you covered for your much-needed resolution of bringing sexy back. So join the 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with our exclusive offer. Go to manscaped.com and use the promo code Sullivan20 for 20% off plus free shipping. Let us have a toast for a new year, new you, and a new you with no pube. To complete the set, Manscaped threw in the Shed travel bag and anti-chafing boxers as free gifts to give to you to keep all your goodies stored nice and comfortably to go along with the Performance Package 4.0. Inside that Performance Package 4.0, you'll find the signature Lawnmower 4.0. The advanced skin-safe technology reduces cuts and nicks on your delicate parts. It also comes equipped with a 4000K LED spotlight that will shine a light to the promised land 2023 looks to be. Cheers to new balls in 2023. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Sullivan20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use that promo code Sullivan20. Time to feel sexy and free this 2023 with Manscaped. Please welcome in our new sponsor, Fishing Clash. Download Fishing Clash for free right now on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of your Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose the gift code section, and input my special code, Taskmaster, to get an awesome reward for a total value of $20. Enjoy chilling atmosphere after a hard-working day. Get familiar with different types of fish species and their habits. You can choose one or two, or you know what you like the most. Explore amazing fishing spots worldwide from Florida to Kamchatka. Whether you prefer fly fishing, ice fishing, trolling, you'll admire the look of all the fishing spots available in this game. This game will help you remember how you went fishing with your dad when you were a kid. So download Fishing Clash today for free on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of the Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose gift code section, and input the special code Taskmaster to get a total value of $20. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fishing Clash, as it is a great casual time killer. Welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I am your host, JP John Paz. With me, of course, star of the show, the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in history of the business, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
Well, we're coming with some sad news, right, JP?
Yeah.
I mean, the Briscoe brothers, I had the pleasure of meeting when I did that little stint in Ring of Honor. And one of the things about Jay Briscoe, he always had a smile on his face. He was always happy, and he was a great family man. He would have his kids and wife there. Wonderful, wonderful person. It's just sad. And I guess his kids were in the car too, huh?
Yeah, yep, terrible. Wife and kids were in the car, yep.
Oh, the wife was in the car also?
Yes, I think so.
Wow.
But I know the kids were, they were banged up too.
One of those really banged up, right?
Yeah, might not be able to walk. It's terrible, terrible stuff.
Wow. You know, prayers are sent out to their family. And again, great wrestler, but a better human being. Wonderful family too. I met the mother and father. Very, very nice people. And it's such a tragedy this happened. They were one of the best tag teams I've ever seen, too. And individual wrestlers. But that isn't what's lacking today. It's we lost a great guy and a great family member. So,
yeah. Oh, man, it's just absolutely, that was absolutely gut-wrenching when I heard what the news and what happened. Love the Briscoe boys, them boys, if you will. So good, especially Jay, former, you know, two-time Ring of Honor world champion, besides being multiple, I think it was 13-time tag champion. But it's just one of those things where it's like, man, such a great guy. You see the video of him with his daughter dancing around doing the cheerleading stuff, and he's such a cool guy. I got the privilege to meet him a few times, talk to him a bunch, text him a few times. Just a really, really good dude.
Yes, yes. And I think that's a consensus across the board. I mean, very, very family-oriented. They didn't let their success get to their heads. Always a smile on their face, happy-go-lucky, come up to say hello to everybody. Great guys, great guys. But we're certainly going to miss him. And like I said before, our prayers are out to his family. That's for sure.
Yeah, oh my God, hopefully his kids are okay. But man, that was terrible news. And obviously prayers go out to his family, especially his brother Mark, who I know they were very close. I think they're only 11 months apart, I'm pretty sure. I mean, they were like super duper close too. Prayers out to him as well.
Yeah, exactly. Prayers out to Mark too, because like you said, they were very, very close. I'm very close, my brother, and I know how it would be if I lost him.
Man, R.I.P. Jay Briscoe. Just that was just shocking, shocking, terrible news. Obviously, with the auto accident, man, just crazy. I think if you could kind of say it, Briscoe's probably the best tag team in the last 20 years. I don't know if you agree or not, but to me, they were.
If they weren't, they were very close to being the best tag team in 20 years. Nonstop action, fabulous performers, but like I said before, wonderful human beings.
So our condolences go out to the family big time. I mean, RIP Jay Briscoe, dem boys, one of the best. Love me some Jay Briscoe. He was an original OG Ring of Honor fan, so just a huge fan. But let's change gears. Let's go into the topic at hand. Let's go WCW. Let's talk about the first ever WCW Thunder, January 8th, 1998. WCW put this show on the airwaves. It was at the Ocean Center in Daytona Beach, Florida. Seems like a lot of big shows happen at the Ocean Center in Daytona Beach, Florida for WCW.
I was on the first wrestling show ever. I wrestled Bad News Allen in a Thunderdome. And funny thing, Lakeland used to be Lakeland and St. Pete were a hot towns, right? And I convinced, when I was the booker, I convinced Mike Graham to run the Ocean Center. And he said, I don't know, we've always ran that smaller building. It was an armory. He said, well, you never drew very well there. I said, I'll bet you $500 we outdraw Lakeland. He said, that will never happen. And I said, well, let's make a bet. We bet $500 you had to pay me. But Mike knew how to make an entrance. He came in on a helicopter and landed in the parking lot. Yeah.
He had to pay up, though. He had to pay up those $500. That's awesome for you, yeah.
Yeah, but can you imagine what it must have cost for a helicopter ride?
Yeah, true. True, yeah. Is he crazy? Yeah.
Yeah, the $500 were nothing compared to what that cost.
So obviously, you know, you're very ingrained in that area. You're very comfortable in that area, in Florida. But as far as Thunder and WCW is concerned, it is interesting that it's one of the things where it's like, did you guys even want to do Thunder? Because I hear all this stuff from Bischoff for years. He always is like, well, I didn't like the idea. I didn't want to do Thunder. Do you have that same kind of mindset or no?
Absolutely. And I agree with Eric. That was one of the big chips that was a huge mistake. We had 3 hours on Monday. Then we came back with two more. 5 hours of wrestling was too much. And the other thing is, we talked off camera. They had talked about bringing more guys and making it completely different. We would have a Hogan come. The idea was Hogan would come occasionally for an interview or maybe a match, very rarely in Sting and the NWO, but it, that didn't come to fruition. And I think it was because the North Tower didn't understand wrestling. I mean, overexposure. We don't learn anything from history. I'll give you an example. In the 50s, wrestling was sky high. And I talked to Jim Barnett about this because Jim, people don't understand that Jim was Fred Kohler's right-hand man in Chicago. And there was, do you know there was two national TVs out of Chicago and they're both NWA members?
Oh, I thought there was only one. Okay, so there's two. Okay.
There was Fred Kohler on Monday and Wednesday, and on Tuesdays and Thursdays, it was Leonard Schwartz. One was from the Marigold Arena, and the other one, I believe, was from the Rainbow Arena. And like I said, I was asking Jim about it. And the funny thing was, even though Leonard Schwartz was an NWA member, he used the AWA champion out of Boston, you know, that Paul Bowser that I talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Bowser's territory was all of New England. He owned Montreal. He put his own guy in there, Eddie Quinn. He put the Tunnies in Toronto. He owned part of the New York office with Vince Sr. in Toots Mont. Then he owned part of Ohio with Al Haft. And Al Haft used this champion, even though Al was a NWA member. He owned part of the Chicago office with Fred Kohler, a small part. And then he placed guys in San Francisco, in L.A., so his champion was recognized by Montreal, Toronto, all of New England, and Boston especially. New York, they used the NWA champion. But in Chicago, one of the promoters on national TV had the AWA champion, the famous screw job with Gorgeous George beating Chief Don Eagle. Have you ever seen that tape?
No, never seen it. Heard of it, but never seen it.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. Watch it. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. When he got screwed, Don Eagle was a huge star. He was a Mohawk Indian from Canada, and his father was in the wrestling business, too. And I look at it now. Can you imagine back in the day that they allowed, when the NWA was probably at its zenith, they allowed them to use another champion?
Crazy.
Yeah. So, yeah. So where I'm getting about the overexposure, I used to sit and talk to Jim because he's one of the smartest guys ever that business, I believe. And you go back, and I'm not sure Vince would have got all those TVs if it wasn't for Barnett, because Barnett had TVs all across the country. You know, like, he just didn't have territories. He had towns also. Like, he had part of Vegas with Johnny Doyle. He had Colorado, Denver, and the Bruiser was so over there. They were selling out big time in all of Colorado. And then he had Lexington, he had Louisville, and he had part of Chicago. So I was asking, what happened in the, they had a huge slump in the 60s. The Garden was half full, Madison Square Garden was half full. Boston was the same. The major towns had taken a hit. And he said, Kevin, how many times can they say Bearcat Wright wrestle Dr. Jerry Graham? How many times can they see Kowalski wrestle Yukon Eric? All these guys have been on TV for the inception of the Chicago wrestling, which was back in 46. Think about that. But it exploded in the early 50s. So these guys had been seen on national TV and local TV. And this is a little tidbit. When they used to bring guys in from Chicago and on the programs, they would say, like, Yukon Eric versus Killer Kowalski. And on the program, it would say, as seen on TV. So they were getting, using the town of Chicago, both offices, and they were getting a booking fee.
Oh, nice. Smart. Yeah, smart.
So, I mean, so what I said to Jimmy, he said, how many times have I thought about that? And then now we get Thunder. I'm thinking, this is history repeating itself, overexposure. Especially when we didn't get that. Eric probably didn't get the, I'm sure Eric didn't get the money for the crew because the North Tower not knowing about wrestling. Well, if it works on Monday night, it will work on Thursday night. So I'm sure if you've heard Eric say that, I agreed with him 100%. How much, you know, how much can you, you like steak, but you don't want to see it for 5 hours. Eat it for 5 hours.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So I guess the story goes at that point in time, too, like you said about the production people, Time Warner wasn't really hiring additional production people. So you're going to have the people you were working with, Nitro. I mean, they're going to be working a lot more. I mean, you're not going to be able to get additional production people, which kind of kills the current production people that you have because, oh, by the way, you have to do another show and it's in another night. And, you know, it's a lot more, I guess you could say a lot more trouble or a lot more burden on that production crew, too. So, I mean, that stinks for them.
And they had some creative accounting, Turner. When we would do Nitro on TNT, right? Mm-hmm. The trucks were TBS trucks. When we did Thunder, they were TNT trucks. So they could write off like they were hiring themselves to do two different shows.
Hmm. Wow. It's a little getting a little creative there. And in the Nitro book by Guy Evans, he talks a lot about that, that kind of stuff that they would do to have some creative, quote unquote, creative accounting.
Right. Right.
So also Bischoff was saying exactly what you said as well, that a lot of overexposure, we're going to be using the talent on both shows, even WWE, current WWE, which obviously they kind of copied. The SmackDown is a complete copy of a Thunder. Obviously they were kind of a counter program, you guys, and counteracting to you guys. But the whole thing was you overexpose the talent if they're on both. So you got to try to either split it up. But if you don't have enough talent or enough good talent, one show will definitely suffer. And you see that today. I mean, SmackDown is great and Raw is pretty bad for the most part.
You know, you think they would learn from our mistake. You know what I mean? But isn't that why they originally had the draft? They were hoping that they could split the talent up, but it never really worked until now, right? Because guys are still crisscrossing, I believe. Am I right?
Yep.
So, I mean, that's a tough thing.
Yeah, they kind of ignore the drafts thing that they do.
Yeah.
And overexposure, like you said, is one of the things where people just get tired of certain characters, and it even dilutes the storyline. It dilutes the characters. It's almost like less is more, but then you add another show, and it's just throwing more out there, and you can't do less is more when you do that.
And you know what else everybody forgets about that? We had 6:05 Saturday night, 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, and then we had a morning show for a while. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, WCW Pro. Oh, yeah.
So, you
had Worldwide, you had Pro. You even had a syndicated show called Prime at one point.
I think Prime wasn't Prime basically the one out of Disney?
Yes, a lot of it was filmed. And it was funny, I remember like Chris Cruz and Dusty would be there. They would just, you know, they would be doing stand-ups. And one time Dusty showed that Chris Cruz was wearing shorts. I was like, look at this, he's wearing shorts here. Because, you know, they never see below his waist. So
Right.
Just a funny little show there. But with Thunder, it's like, okay, WWE is so hot, it almost feels like the people at the Hightower, Turner's executives are like, oh, well, let's give TBS a show because TNT is such a hot show. Wrestling is so hot right now, and it kind of kills and dilutes the market.
Yeah, and I think there was some inside competition between TBS and TNT because TNT was grabbing all those numbers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, this was a sidebar. I can remember going up to the office. Our office was on the 13th floor. And I had cowboy boots on and jeans and a dress shirt. And when I pressed 13, these guys said, oh, you're in the work for the wrestling company? I said, yeah. He said, what are you doing there? I said, keeping your guys' jobs.
Nice.
Yeah.
You guys were obviously the top rating getters for them, for sure.
By far. Yeah.
So they want, obviously, Thunder because Nitro's success. They see that they're giving TBS some love there. But the only thing is, they're saying production costs for Thunder could be between $12 million and $15 million per year. So, I mean, that's a bit of a hike. I mean, this is a 98, so obviously it would be way more now. But if you look at it, it's like, okay, who's paying for that? You guys didn't want to pay for that, obviously. You know what I mean? So there's a cost incurred here, too, that kind of is going to hamper WCW big time.
Yeah, and the other cost is flights, hotels, cars. Some of the guys, and it wasn't just a few. There were a lot of guys that had first-class tickets. And then when AOL took over, they had, you know, standards and practices in the dressing room, right?
Yep.
So I would book the TVs like Janie was our secretary. And we had an in-house travel agency. And I know for a fact they were getting discounts on the tickets, but still, if you're flying a guy first class and he's got a car and he's got a hotel room, I would try to watch the expenses. So guys that I knew that were going to be on the TV, even if it was going to be 6 weeks out, I could take them off before they issued the ticket. Right, but I'd say, get the tickets early. These guys are going to be there. Well, I come in one night, and the standard practice guy says, you need to bring all the talent to these TVs. So I have, like, I can remember the Steiners particularly. They flew. They weren't on the show that week because they had just got back from Japan. They flew on a first-class ticket, had a hotel room paid for, and a rental car. They would come in a cab, walk in and say, we on the show? No. Can we go home? Sure. They would turn around, get the ticket changed, and go home. I'd send 20 guys home.
Oh, my God. Wow. That's costly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a bit of a waste, too, for a lot of the talent.
Yeah, and they just want to make sure that if somebody didn't show up, they were going to make sure they weren't without without their that I could put somebody in there instead, right?
Well, right.
You know, if I had the Steiners not booked, what were they doing there? And they didn't seem to care.
Wow. Crazy.
Yeah.
So the other thing
was Fred. So to give Eric credit, dude, he was fighting that too. You know what I mean? And I know that he was having a hard time with those guys understanding anything about wrestling. You know, if you look back at it, Eric did a hell of a job. He came from being a third string announcer to running that company. He saw the NWO in Japan, brought that over. And to me, I don't think you could ever do that again because the internet and everybody knows people are under contract, right? So he created a lot of good stuff. I went to Hawaii with him to sealed the deal with the Japanese. I told you what we got, right? We got $1 million a year.
Yep.
Our talent got paid from them when our talent went over there. When their talent came to us, I believe the Japanese paid them. I'm sure the Japanese paid them. And I think we gave them meal money or something. You know what I mean? It was a nice payday. They weren't going to be eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And we put them up in the hotel. But other than that, in car, I guess. No, Sonny would take them in a van, the Japanese boys, or a car. And so the expenses, Eric was trying to keep expenses down as much as he could. But the Japanese deal was a feather in his cap, too. You know what I mean? You get $1 million for just using talent.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And like you said, it was much more than $1 million today.
And you think about it too, Bischoff didn't want to do Thunder initially, which is pretty smart because it's like, oh, I don't want to dilute the product and all the reasons we named. But then he's like, okay, maybe we'll just run some more house shows and maybe we can kind of figure out, you know, how to really kind of pay for this show and do this show because it's structured much differently back then than it is today as far as them giving the production money for the show and, you know, putting the show on. So you run more house shows, and then he decides, okay, since we have Bret Hart, maybe Bret Hart could be the staple of Thunder and kind of be the guy for Thunder, and we'll have different talent. Was that ever said to you that, oh, maybe Bret could be like the Thunder guy and, you know, we'll have Hogan on Nitro kind of thing?
Well, they thought that, but again, the North Tower and the TBS people wanted Hogan and the NWO on there because they saw the numbers they were doing. Not taking anything away from Bret, he had just come over and he was being written a storyline. Remember, is he NWO? Is he not? You know, is
yep.
he? So they were going to make sure, I believe, they put pressure on Eric. And, you know, that was a pipeline to Ted. I'm sure Ted, not really knowing wrestling, even though he has said multiple times that wrestling saved TBS, I'm figuring that he was not in the loop. And he just said, sure, bring those guys. You got to bring them. I'm paying them this amount of money. Because you got to remember, Hogan was in a personal service contract. I'm pretty sure Goldberg was, and I wouldn't surprise me if Hall and Nash weren't.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at it, it's one of the things where it's like, okay, if you got Hogan and the NWO, you probably want him on Thunder too, because obviously they're the reasons why Nitro was so hot and why Nitro destroyed WWF for 2 years.
Right. And, you know, and I've been a critic about the NWO being too watered down, right? And maybe that was Eric's idea that this they could build these guys up on Nitro and then send them to Thunder and still NWO, but you don't have to bring all Nash and Hogan and Kidd. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And then putting Brett in there. But it was just, it was, JP, it was like everybody's up for Nitro. And I mean, Monday night, and I know people are going to say, well, that's what they're getting paid for. There was an energy lacking in Thunder when you walked into the building. It was like, oh, we're going to do this again. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
And it made it a lot harder. And I think that hustled the demise of WCW.
And if you remember the commercials and stuff that you guys had, Hogan was on a lot. I know the Giant was too, but Hogan was on a lot of the commercials. So it kind of signifies, oh, Hogan must be on Thunder because he's like, I'm going to bring the Thunder, brother, and stuff like that. So it's got to mean that Hogan's got to be on the show. He's on the old commercials. So that's another thing, too. It's like, can we not have Hogan on the show? I mean, it's kind of risque.
And the other thing was they had to pay Hogan separately for Thunder.
Really? Why is that?
Because in his contract, there was only Nitro.
So they had to pony up some more money for the Hulkster.
Yeah. You know, and he didn't, I don't think he ever worked the Saturday night except when he came in, right?
Mm-hmm. Very rarely, yep.
You know, once Nitro started, I don't ever remember.
I don't remember either. Nope.
No. So now you have to come up with a substantial amount of money for Hogan. Now, I knew Hogan got that, but maybe the other guys did too, some of the other guys. Like Nash and Hall had that favored nation contract.
Yes. Yep.
So
what? Initially, though, like, what did you think? Did you think the show was going to do well at first and then taper out? Because,
No. I just knew you couldn't. And then when you go in there, like I said, you could feel the energy down. There wasn't anybody not wanting to do it. It was like, you know, I know it's scripted, but guys are flying and they're working house shows. And then Thursday, you got to get up for that. You know, after you've been the sky high for Nitro, it's like there was just an energy lacking. I don't know if that makes sense to our friends out there listening, but does it make sense to you that you could, it would be like playing a Sunday night game and then playing a Thursday night game in football now? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, there's the energy's not quite there. Yeah. So were you in charge of booking Thunder?
Yeah, at that time, yeah.
Did you think it's too much in your duties to have to book two shows, or you didn't mind?
I didn't mind, but I knew it was going to be a lot difficult, and I knew it would eventually water the product down, because what are you going to do? You're going to do another angle on Thunder, and you could do that, but boy, you're burning angles out too, storylines.
Do you think that you burn the announcers out too? Because I know Heenan and Schiavone on the show, but you change it up and you throw Lee Marshall on the show. So, I mean, a little bit of a change, but maybe Schiavone and Heenan maybe were a little burnt out too, having to do all those shows.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, because they did an incredible job. And then you go, when was Hudson there?
Much later, not much later. He's still working there, but later on he joins the show with like more full time. But at this point, he's more like a Saturday night guy kind of thing.
Yeah, because I always thought Scott did an incredible job. I just liked his voice and his authoritative voice.
Now, as far as this Thunder is concerned, it's crazy. They're all short matches, and I'll just kind of run through the matches maybe quicker, and I'll just talk about the big points afterwards. But it just was crazy how many matches, 12 matches in the 2 hours, plus the show. Plus, you had the big segment with J.J. Dillon, Roddy Piper, Hollywood Hogan, Sting, and Scott Hall to determine who the WCW World Champion is going to be. Because the big thing, this is January 8th. This is a few weeks after Starrcade 97 with the controversy that we've talked about a few times with Hogan and Sting and Nick Patrick and the fast count. Bret Hart coming down as a referee. So all that controversy is still there. They have the match right after, the day after, on Nitro at Sting and Hogan, and there's no finish to that match, and it just kind of goes off air, and there's no finish. It's a no contest between Sting and Hogan. So it's like, okay, do we still have a champion? Do we not have a champion? Sting has the belt. But when they have this, it'll be in the meat of the show, but I'll just talk about it now. They'll have all those guys out there, and J.J. Dillon basically says, listen, there's too much controversy involved. There is no champion. Sting finally talks and says, J.J. Dillon, you have no guts. And Hogan, you're a dead man. But he throws the title at J.J. Dillon. So it's like, that was the big thing, and it's all centered around the controversy of the world title. So you have a big talking point for the show, but is that great? Because the talking point is off of controversy of bad booking. Not bad booking, but bad I don't know, just bad creative with Bischoff and Hogan and Nick Patrick.
Yeah, and the other thing was, I think that they're trying to cause controversy there.
Yeah.
And hopefully bring something over for Thunder. We're kind of trying to thread them together, but that was not the way to go in hindsight, you know. It was just, if we had opened up, sort of like the first two Nitros, we had Pillman and Juice and Thunder Lager. Then I had Sabu, who bad people hadn't seen. We could have got guys. We could probably work the deal with ECW and Paul, where we could take some of their guys and expose them and not hurt them and use Paul's creativity that he got guys over that probably wouldn't have gotten over any place else because they would have been pushed down the card. So we could have gotten a rub off the ECW fans. Because the thing about ECW, my analogy with ECW was, it was like Coors. You're too young to remember this. Coors didn't go east of the Mississippi. Are you aware of that, John?
No, I didn't know that. No, that's no. Weird.
And here's something crazy. In Kansas City, Kansas, you could get Coors, but you couldn't get it in Missouri.
Wow, that's really weird. Why is that? Why is the
because cutoff? They didn't, you know, this was before Coors really exploded. It was a regional beer, just like Knickerbocker was a regional beer to your area. And Narragansett was a regional beer to New England. There was a lot of regional beers. So I guess they didn't feel that to try to break in the marketplace back then, they would be successful because the big beer companies, the Schlitz and the Budweisers and name me a few others, but the big ones. And then you had... like I said, Narragansett, you had Knickerbocker, you had Rainier out the west, you had Hams in Minnesota, and the Dakotas. Maybe they didn't think they could be successful, so they only went that far. Because you got to remember this, too. That was the only beer that the trucks were air-conditioned. Coors couldn't be sent without it being air conditioner or go bad.
Interesting. Okay.
Cost was prohibited. So I always thought, so the thing where I'm going with this, people would drive to Texas from like Tennessee and get a truckload, you know, a pickup truckload of Coors beer and take it. Because the mystique was, Coors was where you, like anything else, where you can't get it, you want it, right?
Yep.
So people would go bring Coors back and like you got to remember, this was when Coors was probably $2 a six pack. They were selling it for $12 or $15 a six pack because the mystique was everybody talked about it. So I think that's what ECW was bigger in people's minds than it really was.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it, yeah.
So when people talked like that, I thought that if we got had worked out a deal with Paul and taken like a Tommy Dreamer or Rob Van Dam or Taz or Sandman, who most of those guys eventually came, right?
Yeah.
If we could have got them, it would have helped both companies. But I think that Paul, why it didn't probably transpire, because Paul was afraid, and rightfully so, that we would take his talent. I remember when we were going to take Malenko and Guerrero, I called Paul 2 months ahead of time and said, you're going to lose these guys, Paul. Nothing I can do. And get as much out of them as you can now.
Makes sense, but that's good you gave him the heads up.
Yeah, yeah. And Paul, you know, I broke Paul in the business, so I have an affinity for Paul. So, but I see now that it couldn't have worked, but we could have maybe strengthened our position with Japan if we brought, you know, Saito, Chono, a bunch of those guys over at first. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
And work the deal with Japan that we'd have them for 3 months at a time, like they do with some of the guys in the dojo, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. The little excursions, yeah.
And we kept them for 3 months. First of all, they'd see different guys. They'd see a different style. Then we could get some guys that were ready to come to the major players and got something out of them. And we might have found guys, you know what I mean? We might have found a guy that got over. And it would have been a completely different show. And I think if we didn't bring the NWO over, it would have strengthened them so they didn't have to make it a gang of guys, a gaggle of guys. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. The thing is, too, with like the Sting-Hogan segment, obviously the first time Sting spoke in basically a year, I think that did garner a pretty good number. That did bring over a pretty good audience because the first Thunder is a 4.0. So, I mean, got to be happy with that. That's a pretty damn good rating. So, despite everybody saying that that storyline with Sting and Hogan and Starrcade killed WCW, not right away at least. Anyway, maybe it put a big dagger in it, but it didn't kill it right away because this first Thunder does a 4.0.
Well, this is before the Finger of Doom, right?
Which
I think it really hurt. And, you know, again, I've always said this. I've explained to you, Kevin was a military guy. Kevin was huge at the time. I don't think Hulk wanted to work with him because Kevin looked so good, and I'm not belittling Hulk. Kevin did what he was asked to do. And what was the other one we did that was, oh, the Goldberg thing, too. You know what I mean?
That's Goldberg losing.
It was, he had to lose, but the way he lost, I'm still adamant about that. The way he should have lost, and I'm going to say something about you in a second, you were completely right. The way Goldberg should have lost, in my mind, was they having a hell of a match. He turnbuckles Kevin. He makes the, goes for the spear. Kevin steps out of the way, hits the post. He bounced back. Kevin gives him a big foot. turns him around and gives him a powerbomb. 1, 2, 3. Goldberg was real. We should have done a real finish, not the cattle prod, 12 guys running in, handcuffs, everything that we did. Just that hurt Bill and it hurt the company, I believe. So this is why we were still riding pretty high. So people turned in, first of all, because Nitro was hot. But we ended up paying for our mistake.
With this, Thunder, like I said, 4.0, you guys had to be happy with it. But it's almost kind of almost bittersweet because it's like, oh, no, you know, we got such a good rating. They're going to want to keep this thing alive. If it got a bad rating, they'd kill it. You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, we got to keep it alive.
But you also have to remember what was in our place before that was probably doing a 0.06.
Yeah, definitely.
So what?
There's probably dinner at a movie or whatever the hell would be playing. Yeah. Then. Yeah.
So we're 5 3/4 times better than what was in that slot. So I'm sure they were happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was this a big plan, though, too, to have Sting, this be the first time that he talked, be a big show like Thunder, this is the first edition? Or is that something that you just hadn't needed to do anyway? A guy hasn't talked in over a year. He's got to say something.
I think that the consensus was that he needed to talk. And what better way for people to tune in the next week? Sting talked.
J.J. Dillon, the right guy for the job to be the to be the chairman here and the executive chairman and lay down the law in WCW?
Yeah, J.J. was a real, J.J. was a teacher. Then when he retired, he became a prison guard for a while. So he was an authoritary figure. So J.J., to me, was a great talker. And the other thing is, who else could have done it, John?
That's true. That is true. So he basically strips Sting of the title, says he's not the champion, no one's the champion, that they're going to have the match at Super Brawl, which obviously would be the next month. It'll be February. It's going to be Hogan versus Sting in a rematch for the title. The only thing is, yes, they have that match, you know, just 475,000 buys versus what Starrcade did at 700,000 buys. So, yes, that's an awesome number, a great number, but obviously the interest is down because of the controversy of Starrcade, no doubt about it, despite the ratings being good.
Yeah, and right about this time, wasn't WWE getting their stuff together pretty good?
Oh, yeah. Austin was on a roll. Yeah. You know, Vince was, his character was starting to be developed. They announced Mike Tyson's coming in. He's going to be at the Royal Rumble. And then, obviously, you know, he's going to be at WrestleMania that year as well. So, yeah, they were gearing up big time.
And Rock was starting to come on, right?
Yes, big time, yep.
And they had the controversy with Brett. They still had Shawn Michaels. They still had The Undertaker. They had Cactus Jack at the time, right, Mick?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So they were gearing guys up that, and the Tyson thing. And who would have ever thought that Vince McMahon would be the hottest deal of the wrestling business? And that might have been the greatest feud of all times, man, in Austin.
Oh, it's up there. If it's not the best, it's definitely up there. That's a great one.
I think it's the best of all times.
I might have to go Hogan Savage. I love that one from WrestleMania 4 to WrestleMania 5. But Austin McMahon's right up there with it.
Okay. And I would agree with you, except for one thing. Randy had wrestled for decades. Hogan had wrestled for decades. McMahon came off of being the announcer that he never pushed that he was the owner, even though people did know it.
Right.
And to make the switch where he did, and I've watched some of that stuff back because I got the channel,
Yep.
Peacock. their facial expressions were incredible, and they did something every week to top what they did the week before. The cement and the Corvette running over Rock's car with the monster truck. I mean, they were zoned in. And the worst thing we needed to do is overexpose ourselves.
Very true. So this first Thunder, like I mentioned that segment, that's not the opening segment, but I wanted to mention that segment first because I knew there was a lot more to kind of chew on for that, because it's setting up the big Sting Hogan rematch. And obviously it brings up the mention of the controversy at Starrcade, which it seems like you guys were almost trying to dig yourself out of the hole, because what a mess that was. I mean, it's just terrible with Nick Patrick. What the hell happened there? Just crazy. How come Nick Patrick never got fired for that? Because that seems like a fireable offense.
You tell me. You mean, as Nick said, he counted the regular way?
Yep. So it seems like, obviously, I'm just kind of saying that facetiously, why wasn't he fired? But it seemed like, obviously, he was doing what he was told. That's, and obviously, you don't get fired when you get to do, you know, when you do what you're told.
Right. So I think that's the reason.
Yeah. So we'll run through some of the matches here. I can't believe how many matches there are, but they're all short. It's really interesting. So you start off with Macho Man Randy Savage with Miss Elizabeth defeating Chris Adams by DQ, 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Lex Luger kind of gets involved here, and that's why there's a DQ. It almost looks like Chris Adams is going to win this thing, and then it's a DQ, and Macho Man, it gets the victory here. But only 2 minutes, 30 seconds here. Is that you're trying to get as many guys on the show as you can?
Yeah, we were told to load that thing up.
Oh, it's loaded, because there's I think 11 or 12 matches here, and a dark match too. Then the next match, Rick Martel defeated Louis Spicoli, 3 minutes, 15 seconds. I love this return of Rick Martel in 98 to WCW, because it was almost like, you know, where was he the last few years? And he's in an amazing shape. And I know you had a lot to do with bringing him back in, but Bischoff loved him too from the AWA.
Yeah. And I told you, I was in Calgary for 6 weeks one time, and I met Rick there. And I told him I was going to get him booked in the United States. And he probably heard that a dozen times. Well, I ended up driving to Boston from Calgary. And when we got to North Bay, we had a snowstorm, and we were snowed in for 2 days. And then I actually ended up, we stopped in Montreal, and I wrestled Rick in Montreal. And when he got to his house, I said, I think you'll be booked soon. And again, he probably heard that. When I got to Boston, I called Mike, and I said, Mike, there's a kid here. He's 18 years old. He's incredible. And Mike said, okay. Tell him to give us a call. We'll bring him in. Is he, you know, available? I said, yeah. He said, well, we'll bring him in next week. And that was it. He went to Florida. Then as soon as Barnett saw him, Barnett took him to Atlanta. And look what he did. He became the AWA champion. And he had that big run in New York. Rick was very smart. As a young kid, he ended up going to New Zealand and learned under Mark Lewin. He left Mark and bought into Honolulu. He did well there. He sold his interest. He went to Montreal. He had part of that company too. You know, so he was a bright guy and saw that not only could he make money as a wrestler, he could make money as an owner. And that, for a young guy at the time, I have nothing but the most utmost respect for Rick. I've had wonderful times with him, wonderful person. And I'm so glad that he did well in this business.
The model, yes, Rick Martel. But it was cool seeing him in WCW at this point. Almost a little bit shocking, but pretty cool to see him in WCW.
So, can I interrupt you for a second?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know what I was saying about having guys that mm-hmm. we did. You've mentioned too, Chris Adams, who could work his ass off, and Ricky Martel, who's changed the caliber. I mean, so if we had followed that line and raised those guys, Ricky, we knew, drew money. Chris Adams did too. Maybe not the money Ricky drew, but Chris Adams was a fabulous worker. I worked with him. There was a guy after Watts sold out, and there was a before he sold to Crockett, he was down for a while before that transpired. And there was a guy that ran New Orleans every Tuesday night. And I used to go, Paul Orndorff was there, Abdullah, Chris, myself. He had a bunch of people in there. Oh, Brody. And I got to work with Chris a couple of matches, and he was a super performer. So you could have built a guy like him up. You could have built Ricky up. You could have put them two against one another. That would have been a great match. You know, so, and you could have had, you know, the French Canadian against the English guy. You know what I mean? They could have done a thing where Ricky refused to talk English to him. It would have been, there was what we was talking about before. If we brought those guys in, okay, those two guys. Now, if we could have got our Rob Van Dam and a Sabu, you got a pretty interesting early crew. You know what I mean? You got four guys that all drew nothing but money.
I agree. Yeah. So, next up, we have Tenzan versus O'Hara. Tenzan gets the victory. O'Hara, of course, was managed by Sonny Ono. Tenzan wins in about 3 minutes. So a couple Japanese guys. They weren't really with you for very long there. A couple Japanese guys sprinkled in. So not bad there. Then next up is a good one, but very short. So Ric Flair defeats Chris Jericho in 4 minutes and 45 seconds. So I know Jericho isn't the Jericho we all know and love at this point, 98, but he's definitely building himself up. And Flair Jericho, I mean, it's a pretty good match, but only basically less than 5 minutes on the card.
Yeah, they should have had a lot longer.
Then we have your boys up next. The Giant defeats Ming with Jimmy Hart in 2 minutes. So basically a squash there for the Giant. It noticing all the big names so far. Macho Man is on it. He wins. Flair's on it. The Giant. Next up, we have Bill Goldberg. He defeats Steve Mongo McMichael in 2 minutes, 20 seconds. So basically, you know, all the guys around there, they're all getting quick wins over some decent opponents. I know Goldberg McMichael was kind of a feud a little bit at this point, and obviously right. from Starrcade on. But Goldberg here kind of just squashes him. And, you know, obviously that's one of the things where he's headed to the moon in 98.
Right, right.
Do you think Goldberg at this point, early 98, or you think a world title, or is that just too soon? Let's just get this guy more experience.
Too soon. He wasn't ready.
Next up then is the Steiner brothers, Rick and Scott, with Ted DiBiase defending their WCW tag team titles. They defeat Conan and Marcus Buff Bagwell with Vincent to retain the tag titles in about 3 minutes and 30 seconds. So another short one, but another big name there is the Steiner brothers retain their tag team titles over the NWO, obviously, of Buff and Conan. Anything like as far as your thought on some of these matches just being so short? Is it too short or is it?
It's way too short.
Not impactful at all? It's just too short to even be impactful?
Yeah I think so. It was just to get names out there. Let me ask you something.
Yes.
I happen to think Ted DiBiase is a very talented guy.
Me too.
But sometimes we try to stick a left-handed glove on a right hand. Did that, to me, it always didn't make sense. Teddy's the million-dollar man. Rick's the gremlin. And the other guys built better than anybody in the business at that time. Did that not make sense to you?
Not at all. Hated it.
Yeah,
I did. That was crazy.
Yeah, but they were paying Teddy, so they had to find a place for him.
And I guess Bischoff felt like, hey, I kind of overtook him as the, you know, kind of like the mouthpiece of the NWO. He's right. not really needed in the NWO. Teddy was kind of going in his real life, in his personal life, was going to become born again. So I don't know. I guess he thought babyface would have worked, but it didn't. He didn't work with the Steiners at all.
No, no. So I'm glad to hear you say that.
No, I hated it at the time too. I'm like, God, this doesn't make sense. He's a babyface, and he's helping the Steiners, and he's all like preachy and stuff. Like, yeah, I didn't like it.
Yeah, yeah.
So the next up is the longest match of the show, which is pretty shocking considering they're both not wrestlers. But well, Zbyszko was, but it's Larry Zbyszko of WCW defeating Eric Bischoff of the NWO, who had Scott Hall in his corner. The match was won by Zbyszko via DQ. Match went 11 minutes, 30 seconds, and he retains control of WCW Nitro. It was the same exact match pretty much that they had at Starrcade a few weeks earlier. And again, Bret Hart was the referee for this one, as he was for Starrcade. Did you feel the need to run that one back for whatever reason? Maybe, you know, I don't know. Just it was not a good idea for Starrcade, and just deciding to run it back again here on Thunder.
I think that they were, again, trying to get name recognition on the first show. I don't think Bret should have been the referee. If we were going to do something with Bret, that would have been the perfect place for him to get a huge win.
Yeah, and you're building up eventually Bret versus Ric Flair. It sold out. Yeah. So it's like, why is he kind of stuck doing this referee thing? It's just totally, you know, totally lame. And I know he helps out Zbyszko a little bit here, but it just came off as pretty lame.
You know, some people have long memories. And maybe he had the wrong discussion with a guy about the belt at one time. And the guy had his maybe the guy didn't have Bret's best interest at heart.
I could definitely see that.
Yeah.
So then next up, this is kind of a surprise, and I'm trying to remember what the finish was or how did this happen, but Ray Traylor, a.k.a. the Big Boss Man, defeats Scott Hall in 4 minutes. I know there was some chicanery involved and some other things going on, but very strange because why would Hall lose? He's the number one contender. He just won World War III. He was out in the ring earlier with Sting and Hogan saying that he wanted his title shot too. He has every right to be champion. This was kind of a real curveball and a real shocker. And I know he's going to be feuding with like Luger and stuff coming up. And you know, he's not going to necessarily get a ton of wins going into his world title match with Sting eventually at Uncensored. But what was going on here? Why a loss for Hall here?
Okay. You remember Scott, if you've watched his interviews, he always said he could lose and didn't hurt him, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Do you remember him and the kid? He got the kid over?
Yep.
Boss Man and Scott were friends. I'm sure, if I can recall, that Scott was supposed to go over. And he said, no, let me put him over.
Wow, seems like... He does it a lot. I remember he did it for Jericho. I know he beats up Jericho right afterwards, but it seems like...
Kevin put Rey Mysterio over.
Yeah. Yep.
And Scott was it Garza over?
Hector Garza, yep.
That wasn't supposed to go. But they were very good to their friends. And they got along with the Mexican boys incredibly well. You know, when Hall and Nash had their own dressing room, you go in their dressing room and half the Mexican crew would be in there with them. Conan, Ray, Hoover, yep. You know, so they had a very good connection. You know, we always hear the bad stuff about Hall and Nash. The guys underneath loved them.
I believe it.
Yeah.
And all the stories I've heard, that everybody loved them for sure.
Yeah.
Speaking of some of the Mexicans, next up, Juventud Guerrera defeats Ultimo Dragon to win the WCW Cruiserweight Championship. 4 minutes, 20 seconds. So another short match. a big outcome, though. Hoovy beats Ultimo Dragon to win the Cruiserweight Championship. Obviously, those are two of the best workers in the company there. Thus, but didn't get enough time, though, later on in the card either. That kind of stinks.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is to get every bit of talent over that we can to make sure we get a rating. But it also was Ultimo was going in and out between Japan, Mexico, and us. And Hoovy had worked very hard. And like you said, Hoovy was very good. So I think that was the thinking there.
So next up, we have Lex Luger defeating Scott Norton in 2 minutes. Then we have the main event of the evening, Diamond Dallas Page retaining his WWE United States Championship in 7 minutes, defeating Kevin Nash via DQ. Nash, of course, had Hogan on his side, furthering, obviously, when Sting gets involved, it furthers the Sting-Hogan storyline, also keeps DDP strong. He retains the U.S. Championship, and Nash just loses via DQ, which, you know, maintains his heat there and doesn't have to take the loss. But in typical WWE fashion, not a lot of straight-up finishes here for the main event of Thunder.
No, we started to drift away from what got us to the dance.
Do you like that non-finishes on some of the shows? I mean, you get away with it sometimes, but not a lot.
I hate them. I hate them. It's, you're not creative enough to come up with a finish. But you also have to remember a lot of guys had creative control on their stuff then. And Paige was their guy.
Yep. So when you look at it, it's like, okay, WCW Thunder is kind of the show that WCW didn't want. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. So what did you think about the first show, though? How did it come off? Too many matches? Too short of matches? What did you think?
Too many matches. Too short. But it was like, let's load up this card and make sure we get a number. You know, Eric was in a very difficult position. Now he has to please two. He has to please TBS and TNT. Very difficult to serve two masters.
There is a dark match, too, for this. Sting and Hogan come back out for the dark match. Sting gets the victory. So, you know, at least the crowd is going home happy after a Sting defeating Hogan victory here.
What was the attendance, do you remember?
I'll have to check. I'm not sure on that one. Good question. But as far as the show, it did do a 4.0 rating. So, I mean, that's one of the things you can't be, I don't know, you can't be crying anything about that. I mean, that is a great for the show, no doubt about it. So the Daytona Center here, I don't see an exact number, but it looks like it did about 9, is that correct? It looks like it did about 9,000. I'm not sure if that's the actual correct number or not, but it looks like it did about 9,000 people.
That's pretty close to a sellout there. So, again, this is a long time ago. I'm sure they plugged Sting and Hogan really hard.
Yep. So, I mean, you can't knock the attendance, you can't knock that, but eventually you know that it's going to be one of the things where it's like, this is not a good show just because of the overexposure, the production cost, everything. It's just not going to end up being the show that Nitro is and the juggernaut. It's just going to end up being a burden for you guys rather than this big money-making machine.
It also drained Nitro, too. I think that hurt Nitro.
That's another thing. Definitely. I feel like by doing that, definitely. Like, I feel like SmackDown hurts Raw. You know what I mean? Like, nowadays, I think that's just the way it is.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think so, too.
At this point, any thought about putting the title on Bret Hart? I know, obviously, that there's some work to be done, but any thought, or you got to finish the Hogan-Sting storyline?
Well, you got to finish the Hogan-Sting storyline, but I'm not sure what was promised to Bret.
It is weird, though, with Bret that, we've talked about before, we had a whole episode a few weeks ago dedicated to it, but it is weird. It's like he's kind of in the picture, but he's never really in the picture. It's really interesting.
Right. And there was some animosity with some of the guys from WWE with Brett.
Ah, okay. So a little bit of backstage politics as well going on back there.
Yeah.
All right, so let's hit the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. Of course, you can check Kevin out at Taskmaster Talks on Instagram. Kevin, what else you got going on in your world?
I'll be in Pompano Beach Saturday night for CCW. And next Tuesday, I'm doing a Vice talking about the Freebirds.
Nice. Very cool. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you back right back here next week for the Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.